there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on Vermont Edition. And I wanted to let you know that what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Short and sweet, right to the good stuff. Thank you.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb, in for Michaela Lafrac. Well, no matter what part of our region you're listening from, one step outside will confirm the obvious. The weather right now is soupy and sweltering. Temperatures have soared into the 90s since Tuesday, and this June is already one of the hottest on record. So you can be forgiven for thinking summer's been underway for a while. Yet sticklers as we are for the facts, it is actually today, the summer solstice, that marks the official beginning of the hottest of the four seasons. The longest day of the year means, of course, that tonight will mark the shortest night of the year. Also tonight is June's full moon, known as the strawberry full moon since it occurs during the peak of the berry's harvest. And that strawberry moon will appear on the same night as the summer solstice for the first time since 1985. The summer solstice is an opportunity to mark the passing of time. So today on the show, we'll talk to Vermonters about the ways they mark the solstice with celebration and reflection. And our first guest today is Fern Lickfield. She is the director and head teacher of the Green Mountain Druid School and chief of the Green Mountain Druid Order, which is based at the Dreamland Sanctuary in Worcester. And welcome, Fern, to the program today. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mitch. I'm glad to be here.
And listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Do you have a special way you'd like to mark the beginning of the summer? We'll be spending some time in nature to mark the solstice, perhaps. Maybe you'd like to know more about Druidism or practice yourself and want to share some of what you've learned. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That number again is 1-800-639-2211. Or send an email along to Vermont Edition at vermontpublic.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts. So, Fern, for those of us who are unfamiliar, let's start with what exactly it means to be a druid.
That's the million-dollar question. Well, I can certainly speak a bit of my own experience and also the longer history, which I won't go into great detail, but just to say that this is a indigenous spiritual tradition that originates in the British Isles, but has gone global and has continued to evolve through time. It is a tradition that involves looking to nature for our answers, for our connection, for our growth, for noticing and recognizing and honoring the cycles of the moon and the sun, and for being a person who leads from a place of peace. Druids traditionally are people who are advisors, guides, astrologers, peacekeepers, leaders of ceremony. They would have held many very important roles in traditional Celtic society. And today, there are many ways we can show up as druids, and there is no one formulaic form for that. But we tend to follow a path that is based in the earth and love nature and want to be good stewards.
And how long have you been a practicing druid?
Officially since 2006.
And how did you come into it? Was it something that you always had an interest in, or was there someone that you met, how did it come about for you?
Well, before that, I was already walking a pagan path and studying witchcraft as well, and learning a lot with a small coven in my neighborhood, as well as learning through books and my own experiences. But then I did meet a druid. His name is Ivan Macbeth. He is my late husband. And through a mutual connection, was able to get to know him. And he had been trained as a druid in England, where he was from. And when I met him, there was just this really strong sense, not only of connection with him as a person, but as a connection with the path that he was following, that felt truly like a soul home to me, like a soul homecoming. It was a sense of rightness. And and we went on to do lots of good druid things together, including opening our school here in Vermont.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a little bit about Ian a little bit later in the program, and it does sound like you had a real, real connection with him. I want to mention, as far as connections, too, our listeners should know that Fern is joining us via satellite Wi-Fi. There may be a little bit of a lag in her response time in answering some of these questions, but we are certainly glad that you're with us, Fern. You know, you mentioned that this Druidism goes back a long way, and you mentioned the British Isles, and I think that there's probably a popular conception, and maybe it's a misconception, about Druidism that we get from pop culture. You know, it can be depicted kind of scarily in movies, or even, you know, in a funny way. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, this is Spinal Tap and the depiction of the Druids, you know, the so-called Druids talking about Stonehenge on stage there. What do people most often get wrong in their assumptions about Druidism?
This is an interesting question. So what I would say, first of all, is that it's people tend to associate it with like the gray-haired, bearded white man who is sort of holding the staff and sort of worshiping the sun. But yes, there are certainly people like that. And it is much more inclusive as far as gender and as far as age and as far as race. So I think that people tend to think of Druidry because of some of the popular conceptions that are out there in the media as like the old bearded white man, right? So obviously that's not true for all of us. And in fact, in my order, it is primarily female identifying people and more gender binary people that are being drawn to this, as well as men, and we welcome everyone. So that's one piece. And the other is just that it's with that sort of more masculine association, which was true for a period of the Renaissance of Druidry. It's just evolving. And but there is also a connection that is both historic and accurate around the sun. But I want to say that just as we are gender inclusive, we are also inclusive of both lunar and solar tides. There tends to be an association of witches with the moon and the dark, and druids with the sun and the light. And so I want to just say that it's all of that. We actually have a lot more in common than we have different. But yeah, we also very much worship the sun and the moon and the dark as well as the light.
We are speaking with Fern Lickfield. She's the director and head teacher of the Green Mountain Druid School and chief of the Green Mountain Druid Order, which is based in Worcester, Vermont. And if you have a question for Fern, you can give us a call at 800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211, or just send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Fern, I love hearing about the inclusivity of the Druid Order, and I'm curious about how the school got started here in Vermont. You mentioned meeting your late husband, Ian. But was it difficult to get people, though, you know, involved in creating an order here? How quickly did that come together?
Actually was not that difficult. I think it was a niche that, or a need even, that wasn't being filled. And so his name is Ivan. And
oh, I'm sorry, Ivan.
When I,
yes.
Yeah, that's okay. When I like to say I imported him, when he came over here, we pretty quickly went into opening the school within the year of him arriving legally in this country. And in that same year, we also became stewards of this beautiful sanctuary we call Dreamland. And so the two things lined up very nicely. And so we started the school in 2006. We actually started it on a friend's land in Orange, Vermont, because it was not until the fall of that year that we were able to become stewards here of this land. And so we moved the school here in 2007 and have been going ever since.
You know, Ivan had done a lot of work in teaching Druidism, I guess, to younger people. And he also worked with megalithic stone circles. In fact, he built them, if I have that right. Can you explain what a megalithic stone circle is, and how did he go about building them?
Yeah, that was a strong passion and skill that Ivan had in his life. He built stone circles all around the world. England, Australia, several in Canada, and several in this country. And somewhere around 20 to 25, I've lost track completely of how many full-size ones that he's built. But megalithic just really means that's just a word that's synonymous with a large standing stone or a megalith. You know, so you could say a megalith is a single standing stone. A megalithic circle would be a standing stone circle.
And go ahead.
So we have a beautiful stone circle here at Dreamland that is our center for teachings as well as ceremony and dance and all sorts of wonderful outdoor activities that tend to be spiritual or connected in with land and sky. And we also spend a lot of time connecting with the stone circle that is on the lakefront, which is where we'll be doing our solstice ceremony on Saturday. That one's called the Earth Clock. And it was also built by Ivan and another and a team of people called Circles for Peace. It's a nonprofit. Ivan and David Brizendine and Patrick McManaway were part of that team of people who first fundraised and got permission to build this circle in right in a park right on the lake. It's a beautiful, beautiful one. And it's public, so we get to do ceremonies there with the general public, which is really special.
That's Oakledge Park in Burlington. And again, this is happening Saturday, as you said, the celebration with the Earth Clock. What exactly is the Earth Clock? How would you describe that to someone?
Well, it's called the Earth Clock because, like many of the old circles, it is aligned to different moments in the year. And so in that way, it's showing us, because of the landscape and the orientation of that particular site, it's oriented towards the sunsets. And so all of the stones on the west side of the circle orient to different sunsets of the year. And so you can tell what time of the year it is by looking to see where the sun is setting over which stone. And you can tell what time of the day it is because in the center of the circle, there is a sundial and you can actually stand on it. So it's really fun because it's a human sundial. You stand on it and your own shadow casts over a series of stones with numbers to tell the time of the day. And so that's why it's called the Earth Clock. It's dedicated to world peace and it is very peaceful there. I hope you get a chance to check it out sometime. It's really a lovely spot.
That sounds beautiful. I love that description. Thank you for sharing that with us. So let's say that someone wants to come this Saturday to celebrate at the Earth Clock. I mean, and maybe they're doing this for the first time. What should they expect? And, you know, should they bring anything? How should they prepare?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we've been doing our ceremonies, solstice ceremonies there every year since the Earth Clock was built. And it interestingly was also completed in 2006. That seems to be a special time for us Druids. turns out it's also the time that was the last major lunar standstill, which is another astronomical event that's aligning with this solstice. Anyway, so yes, we do summer and winter solstices ceremonies there for the public every year. But we do try to go with a weekend timing just so folks who are working can join us. And so it's the closest weekend usually. So in this case, we're gathering at 5 on Saturday. And people are very welcome to come. It's family friendly. And we just ask that you're able and willing to sort of step into sacred space. And it is a participatory ceremony, meaning that people will be guided to take part in various ways, although no one's forced to do anything they don't want to. but it's generally a pretty peaceful and joyful experience. We always have an element at summer solstice of creating a healing potion of prayers and flowers for the lake. So that is something we ask people to bring is even just one flower that will be the sort of anchor for their particular intention setting for the waters. It's a beautiful ceremony in that we have the king and the queen of the ceremony. They're actually holding that role for the whole year. They end up with a procession from the stone circle down the pathway and onto the beach. And then into the water where they release this bowl that we have just charged with loads of really beautiful prayers and energies for the waters, which of course connect to the whole world. So it's for our beautiful lake, but it's beyond that.
I'm hearing such a strong connection with nature here in Druidism and, you know, a connection to the earth. So it sounds like it's very earth-based and celebrating this planet that we all share, of course. I'm wondering if there's also an element to Druidism that has to do with the spiritual, in let's say, is there a belief in an afterlife? Is there a belief in our bodies or our essence, you know, passing from this world to another when we leave this particular world?
Well, as Ivan would say, no druid can speak for another druid.
I love that.
However,
that's great.
I would say that there's not a lot of dogma. I think there's definitely some underlying themes that most of us agree with. However, and I will say that most of the druids I know do believe in reincarnation, and that certainly includes myself. I still have a very active, loving relationship with Ivan. He's very much in my life and shows up regularly, not only for myself, but some of the students in our school. He's still very much a teacher and a guide. My belief is that absolutely we have a soul that goes through many incarnation experiences. And there, you know, you could think of that along a linear timeline, but when we move beyond this particular space-time continuum, it's not the same. And so, you know, it's more than our limited rational brains can really understand, but I do believe and experience that to be true in my own lifetime.
It does sound, though, less dogmatic than, let's say, organized traditional religion. Your first comment from that question was, you know, as Ivan would say, you know, one druid can't tell another druid what to believe or how to think. It does Druidism allow for that greater flexibility in thought, in philosophy, than perhaps normal organized religion would?
Yes, I think that's a pretty clear yes. There a lot of the folks who find themselves drawn to this path, it's yes because of their love of nature, and it's also often folks who don't find themselves fitting into any of the usual boxes.
The usual boxes, right?
In a variety of ways, yeah. And so people who tend to be more autonomous and wanting to sort of like find their own unique and authentic way to connect spiritually and relationally and in community. You know, we have a very strong spiritual community here, and that's also a big draw, is people feeling like they're a little weird and like people don't understand them. And so to come into a circle of people who are equally weird is actually quite a relief.
Keep Vermont weird, keep Druidism weird. It sounds like a little bit of both of there. We're speaking with Fern Lickfield, director and head of teacher of the Green Mountain Druid School and chief of the Green Mountain Druid Order. We are going to take a brief break. I'm learning so much here. I'm fascinated by this. Can't wait to talk to you again, Fern. I hope you'll stick around with us for a moment. Before we do head off to the break, though, I want to mention we put out on Instagram a call to ask listeners to share how they mark the summer solstice. We can share a few of those before we head to break. One listener wrote, "We have a tradition of ladies doing a solstice dip and sip down at our neighborhood beach." Another listener has a similar ritual focused on nature. They wrote, "Sitting out back at home and watching the sunset." And one listener simply stated the way they like to welcome summer is with one word, and that word is dance. And I'd like to add another voice to the conversation right now. Sutton Crawford is with us. She is a tarot reader and witch from Lebanon, New Hampshire in the Upper Valley. Sutton Crawford, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Mitch. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And listeners, we do want to hear from you. If you've got a special ritual for marking the beginning of summer and want to let us know about it, give us a call at 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Will you be spending some time in nature during the summer solstice, despite how hot it is outside? Maybe you'll be at the summer solstice ceremony at the Earth Clock, which is happening on Saturday. Give us a call at 800-639-2211. You can also send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Sutton, I have the same first question for you that I had for Fern, and I'm wondering if maybe you have an even tougher battle against false perceptions when you tell somebody you're a witch. I mean, given how ingrained the pop culture image of witches are, first thing people might conjure up is the woman who went after Dorothy and her little dog Toto too in The Wizard of Oz. This must drive you a little bit nuts. I mean, what is it that people get wrong about witches like yourself?
I mean, I would say a lot of things. There is always this image of the witch being the crone, and they are evil, and they eat babies, and they do satanic rituals, and that's just not true. It's very interesting to hear Fern talk about the Druid Order, because there are so many similarities. My obsession with nature, my need to mark cycles, and to see life as something that is a process and not static. And that's why I love what I do. I love identifying as a witch. And yeah, oftentimes people are very fearful of it, but it's certainly nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned pop culture, but it goes so much further back. Shakespeare and Macbeth and the witches around the cauldron, you know, and there's always been this sort of depiction of, as you said, the evil nature of witches, which is not true. I'm wondering, Sutton, if part of your practice includes healing rituals. You mentioned your connection to nature, using elements of the natural world, maybe to create balms or medicines, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I often, I'm looking at my own herbs right now. I collect, especially during spring and summer, and summer is the perfect time to do this, and the summer solstice, is I collect as many natural growing flowers as I possibly can, and sage and herbs, and I end up drying them all, and they go into potions that I make and into spell bottles that I create. And they are definitely a huge part of my practice. Yes.
Is Vermont a good place to be a witch?
Oh, Vermont's the best place to be a witch. I mean,
you didn't hesitate. I love that.
No, God, no. I chuckled so hard because when you said keep Vermont weird, I threw up my hands in excitement. Yes, keep Vermont weird. Keep the world weird, right? Yeah, I moved from New York City about a year and a half ago. I spent 22 years in New York, and it got so grating on my mental health. It got so grating on this idea of constantly going and hustling, as we like to say. And coming to Vermont was always something that I knew I needed to do in my life, because I needed to be in nature, and I needed to hear birds instead of cars, and I needed to be able to walk outside and be in water. So yeah, Vermont is the perfect place for a witch.
And how long have you been a practicing witch? Yeah.
I mean, my whole life I have been drawn to witchcraft and magic. And then when I got a little bit older, I realized, oh, magic is a real thing, and that I can participate in this. And it's not just fairy tales and, you know, mixing worms and dirt into a fake cauldron in my backyard. But I like to say that I officially came out of the broom closet about 4 years ago, began identifying as a witch, telling everyone that that is how I identify. So officially, 4 years ago is when I shared with the world that I am a witch and participate in magic and witchcraft.
When you came out of the broom closet, and I just love that. It was fantastic. Did you have any hesitation in doing so? I mean, did you have any trepidation saying, all right, this is going to be a little weird. People might push back on this a little bit. Or were you just, this is who I am, and I'm just going to tell people?
You know, honestly, this is who I am, and I'm just going to tell people. You know, a part of what I believe the inclusivity, again, of a witchcraft practice or being a witch is the fact that I'm trying my best to live as authentically as humanly possible. Mm. I'm going to honor all the parts of myself, and I want to be an activist. I want to spread joy and love and peace, just like Fern was talking about. And so, no, I mean, there, you know, there might be that tiny piece of somebody's monkey mind that says, oh, people are going to judge this. But I've never been very fearful of judgment. I feel grateful and lucky and happy about that. And so, no, I was really excited to just say, hey, this is who I am. And now my husband introduces me that way. And I'm very, very proud of it.
We're speaking with Sutton Crawford. She is a tarot reader and witch from Lebanon, New Hampshire. And Fern Lickfield is still on the line with us as well, director and head teacher of the Green Mountain Druid School. If you have questions for either of our guests, give us a call at 800-639-2211. As we celebrate the summer solstice today, you can also send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Fern Lickfield, I wonder if there is any kind of overlap or crossover. I'm sure that you agree with a lot of what you've heard Sutton say so far. Do you ever have witches and druids getting together, sharing ideas, coming together to, you know, maybe share herbs, medicines, formulas, things like that?
Oh, very much so. Yes. It was lovely to hear Sutton speak. And yes, so much similarity and so much overlap, I think, in our ways of walking these paths, which feel pretty parallel to me. Yeah, so I have lots of friends who identify as witches and some who identify as both. In fact, one of my dearest, oldest friends is a witch who then joined the Druid School, mostly because she was wanting more spiritual community around her, and then decided, oh, well, I guess I'm actually a Druid witch. So yes, there are many of us who can easily hold both of those paths because they are so similar. But then also there's Druids who walk a Buddhist path and there's Druids who walk a Christian path. There's a lot of room for people to combine different paths within this, because it's not, but most people don't think of Druidry as a religion, although I know more witches would say that they see witchcraft as a religion. And, you know, that's something that is sort of a philosophical, interesting conversation. But yeah, I think of it more as a lifestyle, a path, a philosophy. And that there's so much inclusiveness in that, you know, as long as it harms none, that like people can, another Ivan quote, you can, you know, believe or worship a god or a goddess or Auntie Mabel or nothing. And so it's all good, you know, as long as it harms none.
Sutton, what about that notion that Fern was just talking about of witchcraft being a kind of religion? Do you see it that way, or is it separate from that?
For me, it's more of a spiritual path. I know that a lot of witches identify as Wiccan, and that would become the kind of organized religion of witchcraft. For me, it's just a way to connect to divinity in whatever form it seems to come in for me. And often that's through nature, often that's through love and my family and being around the people that I hold most dear. But it's a way for me to touch into divinity, touch into what I believe is source or goddess or the universe, as the kids like to call it. But it's not as organized for me as it would be for, say, someone who identifies as Wiccan.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I had forgotten about that very question, and I am so curious, the difference between being a witch and being a Wiccan. And did you already describe that, or how would you make that distinction?
I mean, for me, yeah, the main difference is the religious organization surrounding it. And while witches can still have, you know, we have covens, and so we get together and we do ritual and we do those things. I don't see it, you know, I have shied away from trying to say religion because it carries such a weight to it. Mm-hmm. And people have such a perception of what organized religion looks like. So, you know, I kind of just like to let my freak flag fly a little bit and, you know, open and broaden my horizon. And so while I'm still doing rituals, while I am still in, you know, collections of people, it's more spiritual and less religious for me.
I want to read this email that we got from John in Stratford, who says, one of the customs my wife and I have been doing for going on 50 years is on the solstice picking 14 different wildflowers for your true love and then putting them under the mattress for good luck for the year. It takes a bit of time to find that many varieties and helps focus appreciation on the beauty of the world as well as the one you care so much about. I'm wondering if either of you have ever heard of that particular custom before. Fern, does that sound familiar to you at all?
No, I haven't heard of that one. It's lovely, though. Yeah. We do pick flowers in order to bring them to our ceremony at the lake on solstice, but we don't put them under our pillow. So maybe I should try that.
Mm. And Sutton, are there other similar customs that listeners may be curious about that you've seen practiced for folks who identify as witches?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is very linked to fire and a bonfire. And so I was telling some of my clients today, I said, you know, while that seems a little dangerous to jump a bonfire today, which is historically what people would do, I just invited everybody to go ahead and take an unlit candle, imbue their intention into that candle by holding it in their left hand and putting their right hand over it, and then jumping over the candle. What a safe way to jump over a mini bonfire.
Much safer, for sure. Yeah, I'm glad that you made that distinction. Sutton, I want to ask you this. It's something you mentioned a little earlier during this conversation, and I'm going to push back a little bit on it because I'm curious. You mentioned that magic is real. It's something that you found is real. Now, being in the news business, you know, we are supposed to be dealing with only the facts. That's how we're trained. You know, we're supposed to be skeptical, all of that. And Fern, I'd like you to chime in on this as well after Sutton gives her answer here. What was it that convinced you that magic was real, and how do you define magic?
Defining magic is a very complicated and wonderful thing. I just found that magic is rooted in your intention, right? So if I put enough of my intention into something and then I act in accord, right? So I actually have to make the petition to the universe, do the spell, do the prayer, whatever that looks like for you. And then I have to do it in real time. I have to make the tangible choices in my life to see these things come to fruition, that those two things are magic. And it almost always works out for me. And that's a privileged thing to say, but I am so happy to have discovered that it actually works. And I can't explain why, aside from being intentional and authentic and as powerful as I possibly can be. But so many things that I have asked for or wanted to see happen have come to fruition through this kind of pairing of petitioning to the universe, spell work, and then acting in accord. I mean, being on with you right now is definitely a manifestation that I was wanting to have happen. So there we go.
That is fascinating to me. It really is. Fern, I wonder if you can chime in on this as well, because I have to imagine that if you were asked the question, is magic real? Is it part of your world? You would say?
Yes, emphatically yes. And, you know, we often discern between the kind of stage magic, you know, with someone doing tricks with cards and such, with this more spiritual form of magic, which usually we put a K at the end. So magic spelled with the K, just to discern so that we know what we're talking about, that this is something that we actually take very seriously. And it's not just a sleight of the eye. And my favorite definition that I have been working with of magic is conscious co-creation. You know, because it's like what Sutton was saying with intention, that's the conscious part. And then the co-creation is the part where I am not doing this as a singular separated human. I'm doing this by aligning myself with nature, with the tides, with the forces, with the cycles, and also with the spirits. And so that form of magic means that I am very much in connection as I am manifesting my will. And sometimes it's magic also shows up unexpected. You know, things that can happen that feel magical are those things where it's like nature is trying to get my attention, sometimes in very auspicious and amazing ways. And so magic can be something that I'm putting a lot of intention into. It can also be something that just happens. And again, those are moments of great blessing and privilege.
And there is so much in this world that is inexplicable, that really just does escape any kind of rational explanation. You know, that may be magic, it may not, but I am glad that you were both ready to lean into that and understand that we don't know everything in this world. We don't even know 100% of how our brains work as human beings. So there's that as well. I want to read this email that we got from Elizabeth in Orwell. She says, in my mind, this is by far the best edition of Vermont Edition I've ever heard. This is not my mom writing in, by the way. And I am glad that you are including it, hosting it today. I haven't come out of the broom closet, says Elizabeth, but I identify with all of this discussion and have several close friends who do identify as witches and druids. This discussion gave me the boost I need and a way forward. Thank you so much for the discussion. Well, Elizabeth, thank you very much for writing in from Orwell. You can send us an email as well, vermontedition@vermontpublic.org, as we talk about druidism and we talk about witches and we talk about the summer solstice as well. And we're going to have to break in a minute, but before we do, I want to ask this question of both of you, because a lot of what we've been talking about is this way of kind of doing a reset during the summer solstice, thinking about the year that's been up to this point, and then setting intentions. And I think you've both used that word already for what's to come. How do you use the summer solstice to reflect and then set intentions for the new year? And let's start with you, Fern.
So for me, solstice is akin to the fullness of the moon, right? So it's the annual cycle, and it's this time when the day is long and there is heat and there is expansion and radiance. And that is, you know, something we can witness and experience in the world around us with so much that is growing and blooming. And, you know, the heat of the last few days here in Vermont, certainly bringing that feeling home. And for me, solstice is a time of acknowledging this climax point of the solar year. And also, you know, when we are aligning with the cycles and seasons, there's always both the outer looking and the inner looking. And so I see all of that lushness and all of that warmth and growth outside of myself. And then I'm looking within and noticing, yeah, I feel that inside of me. I feel this expansiveness. I feel how I want to like find my own radiance and really project that outward more strongly. And so some of it is really just about like standing in that radiant light that each of us carries inside of ourselves.
And we have some comments that some folks wrote in as we put this out on Instagram to find out how people are celebrating the summer solstice. One listener wrote, they have a solstice ritual on the beach. And again, on Saturday at Oak Ledge in Burlington, there is going to be an earth clock celebration with many druids taking place, taking participation in that. One listener spends the solstice as part of a summer camp staff. And another said they'd like to pick strawberries. That is quite appropriate with the strawberry full moon happening tonight, coinciding with the summer solstice, by the way, for the first time since 1985. Fern, thank you for your patience and thank you for your explanation, too, before we had to go to break there. I want to continue this discussion asking about something, Sutton, that you do as a witch, and you read tarot cards. What is the best way to succinctly describe what tarot cards are and what a reading of them hopes to reveal?
Tarot cards are a form of communication with something that is divine, with, like I called, source again, with what people might refer to God or goddess. And it really, what they do is it's 78 cards that pull out of the client's mind what they want to discuss. And it's really, truly a form of cards that speaks to the human condition about how we can find more balance, how we can find more joy, how we can find more rest, ease, action, all of these things. It's an amazing, amazing form of divination.
I am learning so much here. So let me get this right, because, you know, again, I have to admit, my perception of this was only what I've learned from pop culture. And, you know, you see things that, so you're not talking about, I love this. It draws out from the person who's getting the cards read what they want to talk about. It isn't then necessarily a look into this is your future. It's not a crystal ball type thing.
Absolutely not. I mean, my understanding and how I use the tarot is that you and everyone else has free will. So it's giving you possibilities of what could potentially happen in your future position, but it is not telling you on this day at this time, this is exactly what's going to happen. Sometimes they do that. Don't be scared, everyone. But it is more about discussing how you fulfill your purpose or how you live a happier life or how you spread more joy and show up in your life to make it the best one it possibly can be.
So when people come into you for a tarot reading, are most of the people that come in for that reading already familiar with the process you just described and they're just looking to go deeper? Or do you get a lot of people who are just curious, have heard about it, and want to find out what it's all about?
Oh my gosh, I get both. Mm. There is definitely people who have zero experience with it, know nothing about it. And then there are people who are either practitioners of tarot themselves that come to me to get a reading. There are people who, you know, pull a daily card and just want to understand it better, but it runs the gambit of people's understanding of how it works, and they all just end up quite beautifully happening, basically.
And again, my apologies if I'm oversimplifying here, but one of the things I found interesting was hearing that there is a death card in the tarot deck that is not necessarily a bad thing. You might think so, that, you know, the death card turns up, but that, am I right that that is not a bad card?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, it's not a comfortable card. It's always funny. The death card is a signifier of something, someone, a way of living that ultimately needs to die in your life, right? So you do pull it. It does feel a little scary because death is uncomfortable and death can be scary and death is a transition, but it's ultimately on the other side of letting that thing go. It's a transformative card. It's a time when you get the opportunity to let the things that don't serve you die and then you get to transform.
Thank you for explaining that. I want to turn to another story now, and this is the story of the Oak King and the Holly King. I'd love to hear from you a bit more about what that story is and how the solstice is a time of both birth and death. Fern, let me start with you on that one. The Oak King and the Holly King, are you familiar with this? I guess you would call it a legend? I'm not sure what you'd call it.
I would call it a story, a myth. And yes, I am very familiar with it. We've actually played it out in ceremony. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's sometimes considered a battle. I like to think of it more as a dance. But yes, the Oak King represents the light half of the year and the Holly King represents the dark half of the year. And so at the solstices, they do battle or they engage in a dance. And one places the crown on the other, who then holds it for the second half of the year. And so at the solstices, that crown gets switched from one to the other. And the Oak King at summer solstice, the oak is the one that represents the light half of the year. So it is considered that he is sort of like in his throne of dominion now. He is at his brightest and most powerful. And then, but at the same time that he is in that place, he knows that he's also going to be in the process now of surrendering some of that power day by day to the Holly King. So just like the yin yang, you know, there's always, even within the brightest moment, there is that seed of darkness that is reborn, just as at winter solstice and the darkest moment, the seed of light is reborn. And so it's this beautiful dance. And it's also like we have to remember that even as we are in our most bright and powerful moment, that there has to be that equal and opposite pulse of the dark that brings us to balance. And at solstice, I think about this also as the need for rest and quiet and contemplation. And because there's so much expansive outward energy in the summertime, and it can be a little bit overwhelming. It can actually be a little burning out for some of us. We get overextended. And so we have to drop in to that still center of deep peace in order to be able to continue to live in a healthy way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I find summer a little weird in that it's still light out sometimes up till, you know, 8, even close to 9 o'clock. To me, that's just me. That's weird. Other people love that. And this is something that's existed from the beginning of time, the light existing with the darkness. One can't exist without the other. They overlap. They change. Sutton, is this something that witches are familiar with well, this story of the Oak King and the Holly King?
Yes, absolutely. It is a big part of this midsummer Litha summer solstice story. And it always feels so important to me when this day comes up to kind of recognize it as this pivotal turning point where the Holly King does take over the throne. And I love seeing it as little by little, because ultimately this is the highest and the longest that the sun is going to be, but then it wanes from this point forward. And it kind of points to the idea that we got to set ourselves up for the next 6 months of our lives, because it's going to need rest. It's going to, the flowers are going to go and lay still, and winter will come, and then it'll all turn right again. So yes, the Holly King and the Oak King is a big part of my understanding of this day.
Boy, the time has flown. I wish I could talk to you both for another hour, but I do want to get this last question in because I think it's kind of important. So much of what we've been talking about here involves our natural world, and so much of our environment has been affected, of course, by climate change. You know, we talked about the record heat right now in the month of June. I'd love to hear from you both briefly on how you grapple with that and what advice you might have for listeners when it comes to things like climate change. Fern, let's start with you.
Well, yes, it is very much a real and present experience for all of us, I think, around the world at this point, and those of us who really align with and love and revere nature. I think perhaps we feel it maybe even more poignantly, because we see it not only in our own lives, but we see it in all of the lives around us. And there's grief in that. There's outrage, there's anger, there's all the feelings around that. And it's really important for there to be spaces for us to be able to express those and release them so that they don't stop us from continuing to do the things that we need to do and why we're here in the world. So it's a both and of, like, yes, acknowledging that this is really freaking hard.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot of loss and a lot of risk of more loss. And we are here to be here at a right at this time for a reason. And so, yes, feel your feelings and then get up and do what you're here to do.
And Sutton, very briefly, I'm sorry to leave you with so little time.
No, absolutely. The exact same thing. It's painful. It's sad. It's hard. But we are here at this time to try and make change happen. We have an election year coming up. We have to vote and protect our earth. And when you're outside today, you have to look around and say, isn't this worth saving? Aren't I supposed to do everything for my future child, the generations that come after this, everything, all of those things? We got to do everything that we possibly can.
Can't thank you both enough for your time today. Fern Lichfield is the director and head teacher of the Green Mountain Druid School and chief of the Green Mountain Druid Order at the Dreamland Sanctuary in Worcester. Thanks for joining us today. And Sutton Crawford, tarot reader and witch from Lebanon, New Hampshire in the Upper Valley. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been a great conversation.
It was really fun. And that's it for today. As always, you can weigh in on our show or pitch us ideas by emailing vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. You can also find Vermont Public on Instagram. Today's show was directed by Liz Fullerton. Our show is produced by Andrea Lorien. I owe a huge bit of thanks for putting some Grateful Dead in the billboard. Thank you, Andrea. And Daniela Fierro. Our call screener today was Rick Barrett. Our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Mitch Wertley. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch up again soon.